So, did you guys know that televisions are region locked?
What?
I'm sorry, what?
Oh, it's your FPIS. It's your FPIS.
My FPS?
Yeah, like the FPS, like, 'cause British TV is like 25 frames per second.
No. No.
I mean, it
That's not
is.
what we're talking about.
Okay, go ahead.
We're talking about it is a television I bought in England, but it's an
Yes.
LG smart TV.
Yeah.
And, you know, I set it up at my new house and I tried to install some of the same apps
Yeah.
and I couldn't install Hulu. And I realized it's because my television is region locked to Europe where Hulu does not exist.
Time to hack that thing, man.
I have to jailbreak a TV.
Wait, you don't have
That's
Hulu? There's
awesome.
no Hulu in Europe?
They don't have Hulu over there.
Do they have anything Hulu adjacent?
They only have the BBC.
They don't have Hulu. They have cheeky
They've got Channel
They
4
got cheeky breakdance.
And
Hello.
ITV.
Hello.
And iPlayer.
What do you watch on your iPlayer, mate? What do you watch on the Beeb?
Oh, well, iPlayer is the BBC streaming service, obviously.
Oh, okay.
God, Shane. Read a pamphlet.
Well, I mean, if you need help jailbreaking or hacking a TV, I'm there, man.
Yeah, you're the guy.
We were just talking about, before this, we were talking about the first movies I downloaded in my college dorm. I was also the guy who installed mod chips and PlayStations in my college dorm. Get at me,
Whoa.
FCC. Hunt me down,
You're gonna get swatted, dude.
Nintendo Players Association.
Seriously, if the FCC is listening, please do not send us any messages. It's fine.
Devin actually looks nervous.
My little brother sent me from my mom's house. He sent me a care package that contained my original modded PlayStation with the controllers and the cables.
Wow.
I don't know what I'm gonna do with it.
You're gonna have to get a CRT.
Yeah, to bust it out.
I mean, it's a museum piece.
Play some Twisted Metal.
What's your favorite PlayStation era game? Devin, you go first.
I think it was called Manhunt.
Okay.
Remember that one?
Was that one of those like rated M for mature games?
Oh yeah.
Playing it without your parents watching.
Yeah, when I was like 12, you know. Mom, if you're listening, I'm sorry.
Metal Gear
You're a Twisted
Solid.
Metal guy?
I mean, yeah, Twisted Metal's up there, but Metal Gear Solid, I think, was
Yeah.
the game that wowed me.
Oh, I mean, I played it on I'm not a big emulator vintage video game person, but I loaded up NGS1 on an emulator the other month, and I was still just like, I can't believe they pulled this off. I
Yeah.
can't believe they pulled this game off on PlayStation. It's so cool.
Well, isn't it Kojima?
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
But of course.
THPS, another classic.
Yes. Yeah. I played, well, my Dreamcast was my pro skater to platform of choice,
Yeah.
and that ruled.
Yeah.
I played more than a few hours of that.
Hello and
And with
welcome.
that, that's
Hello.
the yeah, what? Oh,
Hello and welcome. Hello and welcome to episode 268 of the Dive Down, a Magic the Gathering podcast focused on the latest decks, trends, and strategies for the casual spike. My name is Stanislav here in Chicago, and with me on the line from Denver, Colorado, it's the one and only Shane Beeps.
What's up? I don't have anything. I don't have anything cheeky to say today. I had a good week. You ever have like a good weekend,
No.
and then you get the Sunday scaries, and then it's Monday, and the Monday like validates your Sunday night creepies, where you're like, oh God, I gotta wake up and go to work. And it was like that. But now I'm here with my boys, get to talk about Magic the Gathering, Richard Garfield Deck Master card game.
Did you know that Richard Garfield also plays Balatro?
Hundreds of hours,
Lots of
apparently.
hours.
Or maybe it's like me, though, where he just sort of leaves it on like a little side computer running. Like, I think I've seen Dave on Discord playing Velatro for the past like 72 hours. I think he just has a game open somewhere, or he really loves Velatro and he's avoiding his children.
God, imagine how hot his computer must be.
Those fans spinning, his GeForce 2, his Voodoo 2
It's
FX.
actually just one hand, but he figured out how to like score it to the point where it's just the score
It's
is just
still
going for
multiplying.
24 hours. Yeah.
They say he's still multiplying.
The CPU smoking, trying to do the calculations.
Also with us is local RCQ winner Devin O'Donnell, aka Doomwake. Hello, Devin.
It's me.
First of all, congrats.
That RCQ was an FNM RCQ, and I didn't get home until 3 in the morning, but it was worth it.
Crikey.
It was worth it.
That's unacceptable.
When you say FNM, does that mean it fired at like 7 p.m.?
Yeah, that was their FNM, so it started at like 6:30.
Wow.
I'm honestly surprised that WOTC would allow something like that, but I guess.
I didn't know they could do that, but hey, I mean, I'll take it.
Yeah. You think Huey's going around with the clipboard to the local game stores, checking in on their RCQs, making
Licking
sure everything
the tip
is above
of his,
board?
His pencil, just like posters from Khan's era.
It was good.
Mm. Speaking of things that aren't from Khan's era, we have a newer card gaming accessories brand, Heavy Play. Improves your gameplay and your game day at your FNM RCQs, I imagine.
Devin, you're wearing your Heavy Play t-shirt. Did you use your Heavy Play Equipmax system at the RCQ?
I sure did. Maybe that, you know what? Honestly, that is the only reason that I won. So if you want to win an RCQ, get some Heavy Play product.
Perfect. Yes, it lets you magnetically attach, bundle, and carry things around. Carry all your gaming gear in a single hand. Carry it in multiple hands. I'm not going to care how you carry it. You can put it in your backpack. You can put it in a tote bag. You can throw it like a frisbee from one table to the next. I will not judge. And it will survive that throw like a frisbee. You can get it at your LGS, perhaps. If not, go to heavyplay.com. You can use code thedivedown2024 for 10% off your first order. Also, based on what we know from Randy and the folks over at Heavy Play, they'll probably be at every boots on the ground Magic type event that's happening in the semi-near future. So look for the Heavy Play booth. Tell them the Dive Down sent you. You can check out all of the stuff there. They always have just piles of all of their deck boxes, play mats, sleeves, t-shirts, all that good stuff. And you can, you know, see the quality firsthand before you pull the trigger, because we know this stuff's premium. We understand that. It's not like buying the little, you know, plastic flappy thing like our Dive Down deck boxes, the plastic flappy thing with little Velcro. But you get what you pay for with Heavy Play. I guarantee that.
I love a Shane guarantee. You can take that to the bank or a credit union.
Yeah, you can take. Yeah, I mean, I prefer the credit union, but I do. I'm a Chase banker. Chase, get at us. Sponsor our podcast.
God, I would love that.
Oh my gosh,
the first Magic podcast sponsored by a big bank.
Got an email from Heavy Play a couple of days ago. The events they're coming up is SCGCon Atlanta, April 12th to 14th. Command Fest Dallas, April 19th to the 21st, and Command Fest San Francisco, April 19th also to the 21st.
Stan, what are we doing this week?
On this week's episode, we're going to recap some of the results from the Legacy Master Series Modern Open that took place in Prague this weekend. Guys, do you know where Prague is?
Yeah, I've been there. It's great.
It's in the Czech Republic.
Mm-hmm. It's a lovely, lovely city.
Yeah, and we got lots of data, including some data on what may be the new most popular deck of the weekend and in Modern, and that's Domain Zoo, which we played in advance of this episode.
We played multiple versions of Domain Zoo.
We're going to tell you about our experiences, the love, the hate, the laughs, the lives, and the loves. And then finally, we're going to wrap up with a brief congratulatory round of applause for Devin, who has won yet another regional championship qualifier.
It's going to start now.
We're saving that for the wrap-up. Episode. Oh, okay, yeah. I see.
Yeah. Well, you know how Oppenheimer had a score like that goes through the whole 3-hour runtime?
Yep.
That's going to be the applause in the background of this episode.
Yeah, it's going to do like the music bed,
yes.
Just clapping.
Yes.
That's crowd noise. That's not just me clearing my throat.
Before all that, though, let's housekeep.
All right, we've got... It's a nice, easy week. We've got no new patrons, no increased tiers, no reviews on Apple Podcasts, but we do have some fun Spotify comments, some folks I want to shout out. We've got Kieran W., who states they want more Bellatro conversation. Not this week, but maybe. Mark U., who loves Skillamentals. Travis B., who liked all the parts of the episode. Also, Kurt W., who apparently just loves hearing Stan talk about Skillamentals. So
I haven't really talked about that deck in a long time, or at least not with any affection.
That's for the true heads out there. They remember the glory days of Skillamentals.
Okay, maybe I can run it back.
Also, I want to shout out Fred K. Sent us a nice email about creativity and answered my question, like, when is creativity good And one of Fred's theories is that when the One Ring is less popular, creativity gets better because the One Ring blanks Archon triggers. It can't be destroyed by creativity. Creativity also can't run its own One Rings. And since the One Ring has kind of dropped in popularity since this release, when like everyone was trying it, Fred thinks this is one reason creativity can be more popular again. So thanks for that feedback, Fred. I appreciate that thought process because I have none related to creativity. So thank you. That's us clapping for you, Fred. If you want to, however, support us, separate yourself from your hard-earned dollars, you can go to patreon.com/thedivedown. A buck a week gets you Discord access, gets you into a really lovely community of folks always talking about, you know, sometimes Magic the Gathering, sometimes Balatro, sometimes food, sometimes movies. I don't know. We have a few off-topic channels, but you know, if you really want to talk about Modern or something like that, I guess you can do that too. Patreon.com/thedivedown. Or just directly. Oh, wait, Devin, you have something to say?
Is that John Cena channel still there?
It's secret, only for Stan.
Oh, okay. I see.
It's still just his private thread. You can go to the store, though, thedivedown.com/store. Grab some swag there directly without the weekly commitment. Or Mana Traders is a way that you can sort of give us some money. We get a kickback from them when you use code thedivedown_K4L. It's okay. You can use the code in the show notes that goes to the end of April. Gets you 10% off of your first 2 months of the lovely Mana Trader service, which honestly is better than ever. I love renting decks so quickly. The cards are there so immediate. I have no idea how they do this black magic, but it works. Housekeeping over.
Amazing work. Let's talk about Europe, a beautiful continent.
I was just remembering one of my recent trips and wanting to go back, just like you.
Maybe next time we can go together, Shane.
I would love that. I love traveling with friends.
I'll show you where to get the best pain au chocolats. That's chocolate croissant for you Americans. Legacy European Tour Master Series Prague Grand Open Qualifier Modern is, yep, I think, the full name of the tournament that took place this weekend.
Sounds about right.
I need some more qualifiers on that.
Mm-hmm. 565 players gathered to compete in Modern.
Yeah.
It's a 2-day event, and we have data about the day one metagame, the day two metagame. We have all the deck lists available to us from MTG Melee, and we are going to go through all 585 of them.
Yep, one at a time.
One at a time. And then MTG Meta.io even did a win rate matrix. So we're going to go through the win rate matrix of every individual player. So this is going to be our longest episode.
And yeah, so this is like episode 300. Instead of 300 something, we're going to talk about 300 decks from MTG Melee.
Yeah, buckle up.
300 hours.
All right, so let's look at the day one meta just to start from a very high level. Most popular deck by a not insignificant margin was actually Domain Zoo.
Stanislav.
Yeah.
Did you happen to dig through these at all and look if they're kind of the slightly newer build, slightly older build?
No.
Okay. Because I'm curious how these decks are being qualified now, because as we'll talk about later in the episode, there are some new wrinkles on the old Domain Zoo that are, I think, quite interesting. So I think it'd be cool to know like kind of how these decks shook out in the meta. I'm looking through like the top 50 as I'm talking. I'm buying myself some time. I'm vamping. I see a little bit more of, you know, the turning things sideways type mm-hmm. Domain Zoo rather than the new sort of, I guess it's really just kind of a Murktide variant,
blue or less.
Blue Zoo. Yeah, so I think it looks like it's slightly more skewed towards classic Domain Zoo.
I do think that this number, 66, combines both variants.
Like, yeah, I would imagine so.
I think they just kind of treated Domain as a soup, and whether it's Blue Zoo or Wild Nacatl, it kind of falls into this camp.
Yeah, they're both labeled as Domain Zoo on Melee.
Right on. 66 copies, most popular deck. Pretty impressive. I mean, already making splashes. I think one of the things that all of these decks have in common, obviously, is the rainbow package, Guild Pact of the Ley Lines, or Ley Line of the Guild Pact. I like my version better. Sign of Draco and Ley Line Binding. The second most popular deck, Golgari Yawgmoth with 43 copies. Also, that's a huge showing, I think, for Yawgmoth, which clearly has been on the up and up. I think a lot of people anticipated it was going to be one of the strongest decks in the post-ban metagame. And here we're seeing, like, what I would say is pretty widespread adoption for...
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's 8% for, like, you know, a creature combo-y style deck.
Yeah. The third most popular deck with 38 copies. So, you know, not too far behind Yawgmoth. Old Faithful Mono Green Tron.
People are really trying to ride the mono green train right now. I'm curious why. We'll talk about its performance.
Yeah, I think part of the reason why is if a lot of people are doing the Leyline Scion stuff, it's a pretty good time to be playing Oblivion Stone right now.
Yes. O-Stone can sometimes be good.
You know what, Devin? I love the hypothesis. Let's put a pin in that hypothesis because we have results breakdown. So let's see if that shakes out. I call that a tease. All right, followed by Amulet Titan, 34 decks. Again, like, people thought this was going to be one of the strongest decks post-ban. I think we're seeing the representation sort of follow that logic. Where I think the surprise might be is the fifth most popular deck, Rakdos Scam, 26 copies. So we're seeing, a more significant drop-off between Titan and Scam. But Europe, a Scam meta game.
Scam keeps holding on. I'm not sure exactly how. Like, it seems like it always kind of does what it does, and maybe it's good enough. I think there are some newer variants. Like, I think, you know, the one that did well, spoilers, you know, was the Stalactite Stalker type variant. I don't know. I think sometimes people just love playing Rakdos Midrange. All the Daves out there just like, look, I want to play Rakdos Midrange. I want to do the thing. I don't care if it's a 51% deck or a 49% deck this weekend. I just like casting these cards, and I like doing the thing. So go for it.
Griefer's going to grief.
You know, everything is Jund now. Like, half the format is Jund. So this is just one of the ways to Jund, if you're nasty. By the way, I'm just going to read the decks that had at least 10 copies.
Yeah, do your thing.
As a nice cutoff. But after Scam, 24 copies, just right tailing it, is Five Color Creativity. I think this is one of the decks that is coming on the up and up post-ban. Really struggled against the Cascade decks. Those are out of the picture, effectively. Maybe with one exception. But it's starting to claw back a little bit. I think the Archon triggers are really helpful. I wonder if the Archon triggers are kind of just like good against Scions as part of the equation. Devin giving the nod of approval. Oh, yeah. I'll take it and I'll run with it.
And like what Shane was saying earlier, just the lack of one ring for sure. Like, if you look at all these decks, there's not many ring decks. So
Titan is probably Titan and Tron are like the two ring decks above it, but maybe we'll see some more later. Okay. So after Five Color Creativity is Murktide, which I also think is actually an interesting selection in this, like, domain metagame. I think Counterspell is pretty good against Scions.
If you're on the play.
Yeah, I guess you have to be on the play.
Or Gemstone Caverns. Just run Gemstone Caverns. Then you always have your Counterspell ready on turn two.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's happening. I will say, though, that, like, we do have distinctions here for is it Murktide and Teemer Murktide. And I think the main reason to go Teemer these days, as we see with like some of the highest performing Murktide lists, is just for pick your poison. And that being the answer to Scions in particular.
I'm kind of surprised they would even split them up. I think that is literally the only difference between Teemer and Blue Red. So if you lump those together, Murktide's actually third place. Yeah. Or tied for third.
Okay. Followed by Esper Reanimator, 18 decks. This is surprising to me, in fact, how low this is, just because I think Esper Reanimator has been, in the Western Hemisphere at least, like, really earning a reputation for being just like a really consistent, strong strategy. And seeing like that much of a drop off is just makes me wonder, like, are people figuring out that some of these other top dogs are better against it, and without having as much Cascade around, it's better to play like your creativities and your Murktides than it is to try to bring back Atraxes and Grizzlebrands. Again, I think the matchup win rate will confirm or deny that. All right, next, a deck after my own heart. We have Domain Rhinos with 17 copies.
How does this deck work?
The idea is to get to turn three and play a spell with Cascade on it. It's usually Shardless Agent or Ardent Plea.
Oh.
And you only have one hit in your deck, and that's a card called Crashing Footfalls from Modern Horizons 1.
Okay, this sounds okay.
So you cascade into Crashing Footfalls, and then you produce 2/4/4 rhinos for 3 mana.
Is that good?
It's fine. It's fine.
Do they have trample?
They have trample.
Okay, that's good. But okay,
they actually have trample and hexproof and vigilance and first strike and lifelink.
Oh, that sounds even better.
Yeah, that's the other thing. The reason this is a Domain Rhinos deck is because it has rainbow cards in it.
Okay, got it. All right. Obviously. So 3% of the people were into this deck. It sounds like it should be a little bit more. I wonder if there's some change in the meta that made this slower or something.
Well, another 3% is Hardened Scales, also 17 copies. Probably targeting all of the scam players in the room.
I mean, I think, I don't know about your experience, but I think the Domain Zoo matchup is butts against Hardened Scales. I don't think it seems very good at all.
For Scales?
Yeah, no, meaning as Zoo against Scales, I think Scales seems good against it in my experience.
Yeah, that tracks.
I don't think it's like lights out or anything like that, but I did not enjoy playing against it.
16 copies, mono black coffers. I think we're going to have some thoughts on coffers, but coffers had a really strong showing this weekend.
Yeah. Talk about decks that are good against Domain Zoo, but more on that later.
Yeah, and here's another One Ring deck, of course.
True. Yep. Good card.
All right. Next up, we have Temur Murktide. As we said, primarily just going green for Pick Your Poison. And finally, Goryeo's Blink with 13 copies. Now, Esper Reanimator and Goryeo's Blink, these decks are more similar than they are different. I think the primary difference is, like, maybe
Goryeo's... Is there even a difference?
So I saw like some naming distinctions between the versions that are lumping in rainbow cards and the versions that are not.
This is just sparkling wine. It's not champagne.
I guess so, yeah. But again, like if you're to combine Goryeo's Blink and Esper Reanimator, that's a much bigger percentage of the metagame. So I think this deck was, in fact, actually a little bit more popular than I originally teased it was.
Yeah, just to give listeners at home a kind of an idea. So the Goryeo's Blink, the two highest finishing, one Goryeo's Blink, one Esper Reanimator, they're like maybe 3 cards different. So they're about the same deck.
Are those 3 cards Scion, Guild Pact, and Binding?
No, they don't have those cards.
What is the primary difference?
There was like one more Force of Negation versus one Bone Shard. It's like these very, very small differences.
Interesting. All right, so yeah, maybe this infographic didn't fully clean up the MTG Melee naming data. But that's, you know, this infographic is all we have, so we're going to stick to it. I think maybe one of the interesting pieces here is conversion rates into Day 2. Because we have the full Day 2 metagame as well. And once again, Domain Zoo is the most popular deck with 11 copies. So while a significant drop-off, 66 to 11, it still remained more popular than anything else, even though the order of other more popular decks shook up a little bit. And I think that's where we're going to see where maybe some of the more interesting choices for this particular weekend were. And the second most popular there is actually 5 Color Creativity with 6 copies. Without going into too much unnecessary detail on the Day 2 metagame, the next most popular decks in order were Amulet Titan, Golgari, Yawgmoth. So some of our top strategies from day one are still very popular here, but another big jump is Hardened Scales, and Coffers are now among our top 6. And then after that, it's Tron, Blank, Scam. So Scam, a little bit of a drop-off, Tron, a little bit of a drop-off, Coffers and Scales making good work of the day one metagame at least. Let's talk about the top 8, including the winner. Relatively diverse top 8. The first place in the Swiss was Lucas Blohan on Goryeo's Blink.
Mm-hmm.
The most interesting thing to me in his version of the deck is that he added a Priest of Fel Rites as just an extra copy of Goryeo's Vengeance, essentially.
Sweet card.
A little bit slower, but...
Lucas is a name I have not heard in a long time. Shout out to Lucas. It's been a while.
I knew the name, but I was just like, I haven't heard that in a long time. A long time.
Second place in the Swiss, David Dunica with Yawgmoth. Very stock-looking deck to me. Followed by Tomasz Mokidlarz. I apologize to Tomasz for my horrible pronunciation of the surname, but Tomasz was on Zoo Scam.
You think a guy whose last name is Golovchuk would be a little bit more sympathetic to this?
You know, Polish naming conventions are very different from the Russian-Ukrainian naming conventions that I'm used to. Yeah, so Zooscam, this is interesting. It's also called Five Color Aggro, and I call it Zooscam because it's playing your rainbow package of Binding, Guilt Pack, and Scion, but it also has Grief and Orcish Bowmasters and Not Dead After All. Let's just take two good decks and put them together.
Will do.
I played this deck on stream today. It was lit.
Was it lit?
Yeah, you liked it? Did enjoy. Well, it was good.
Yeah, just so did it just feel like really good mid-range or something? Or
It's funny. Like, when I played it, I didn't do the scam thing that often, but I did have Leyline Scion, you know, a few times. And that's but, like...
I mean, that always feels good.
Bridging that into the mid-range stuff with, like, Hardcast Fable, Hardcast Grief, it just kind of buys you more time to get to that stuff. So, it felt good.
I do like the notion of, like, the two strongest turn ones, or I guess, like, between turn one or two you have is like you can either grief scam someone on turn one and just like rip apart their hand, get a ton of information, and then like have the advantage moving forward from there, or just go turn two, like all but indestructible flying lifelink, first strike, vigilant, trampler. And it's just like either one will be fine by me. And I'm just going to put all the cards together that kind of like make it function in a both an aggro and mid-range package. In fourth place in the Swiss, Mark Hansen on Hardened Scales. Followed by Jacopo Bartolini on Rakdos Scam, featuring zero Shieldred, but adding four Inti, a Kroxa, four Stalactite Stalker to Akademe's Awakening. So lower to the ground, a little bit more aggressive, not going as big as the Shieldred versions are. Maybe that's what we have to do with our scam decks right now to kind of like get underneath the big mana amulets or like these big 4/4 flyers.
Yeah, I finally played against some Stalactite Stalkers in, I don't know if it was my league or like my prep for my league this week, but I was surprised how quickly they got out of hand with fetch lands and stuff like that. Like you descend, I mean, it's, you know, you're descending pretty darn often in modern. And the Stalactite Stalkers were like, you know, 3/3s quickly. And then he had like, you know, a backup. My opponent had a backup, you know, like 2/2, and they have the menace, so you can't really block them very well. And, you know, so it's a perfectly good one drop. And definitely like Devin was saying earlier with the Zooscam is like, you know, that bridges the gap. And that's what, you know, cards like Bowmasters did for Scam, kind of when that card dropped and turned Scam into more of a legitimate deck, because like you just need those bridges that get you from one step of the game to the next. And I think Stalactite is doing the thing.
Yeah, what I like about Stalker too is it kind of like that with if you can grief or Thoughtseize their Scions early, this is a way to apply pressure, and it gives them less time to like draw into those kind of things as opposed to something like a Bowmaster or things like that.
Love it. Sixth place in the Swiss, Idris Bakhtari with Teemer Murktide. It's just as a Murktide splash and green for pick your poison. Was running a main deck dress down, which I feel like we haven't seen in a while. But also, I feel like this is a really clean answer to Domain, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I had that cast against me twice. I stubborn denial the first one, did not have one for the second one. And I was sad. Shane was sad.
I watched him play Edris play on camera, and he ended up going end step, dress down, untap, double heat, kill two Scions. That was pretty sick.
I thought you were gonna make, like you watched my game, and I was like, I don't know, I didn't have spectators on.
Seventh place, Rob Dahan on Blue White Control featuring Kahira, and then in eighth place, Raul Avaskin on Amulet Titan. Raul, in fact, won the event.
It's kind of crazy. An 8 chicken seed, dinner. Amulet on the draw every time, still won. It's kind of wild.
Sometimes Amulet Titan can be good. It does the thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's... I mean, like, how much worse is Titan on the draw than on the play? Like, I mean, sure, it's like, you know, a few percentage points for sure, but if you just draw well, or you know what you're doing, or you, you know, have good sideboard plans or game plans, I feel like good Titan players always have a game plan, and I'm never comfortable against, you know, the Titan person like that I know. Like there's this one person who I see at any RCQ I go to, and I'm almost always run into this person and face them, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, I hope I get really lucky here because you know what you're doing and I don't.
Well, what's interesting, Devin, about your notion of like they're always on the draw. We know the top 8 bracket, and sure, we know the decks that they had to beat along the way, and I wonder like if that actually made it a little easier for them. Because, for instance, in the quarterfinals, it was Titan versus Goryeo's Blink. Maybe actually being on the draw benefits them a little bit because it makes it easier for them to time their Bajuka Bogs.
Maybe. Well, the thing is, the thing about that is, like, you can't really Bajuka Bog at instant speed, right? There's no crop rotation Elvish Reclaimer. So it's like, if the Goryeo's player just has the, like, end step Tainted Indulgence, unstep, you know, untap Goryeo's, you can't really do anything with Bog there. Looking at the sideboard, I mean, there's, you know, a couple Endurances. Yeah, I'm just kind of surprised. It would, like, when I look at these two decks on paper, it seems like it's probably a bad matchup for Titan, but...
Yeah, I mean, speaking of bad matchup, in the semifinals, Titan had to take on Rakdos Scam, which, like, really rough, especially on the draw. And then finally, in the finals, it was against Murktide, which, again, like, Murktide favored against Titan. So, like, maybe Raul is just God mode Titan player. Yeah. All right, so... We did have MTG meta win rates for 563 players worth of data, 4,300 matches.
That's a lot. Let's give some highlights. But yes. I think my first highlight looking at this is Modern is back to what people want it to be largely, which is everything is like 47 to 53%, besides a few outliers.
I love that you brought this up because it's very different from what we saw at the Hunter Burton, where like the top of the metagame was all sub 50% with just a few outliners. Here everything is kind of hovering between like 48 and 52, with again like a handful of outliers that I think kind of dominated, and then maybe some less surprising decks that were dogs in the room, but a lot of like our favorite strategies and the most popular strategies were, you know, like basically average, but not embarrassing.
Yeah, like enjoy your people's meta before MH3. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like we are in the people's meta zone. Play decks you like, you know, have a game plan, meta game against what you think things are going to be, and you're not going to do better than like 55%. And that's a good thing before everything gets blown up.
My favorite part about this one is Mills. Like, if you just look at the very bottom, Mills, like 50, 50, and then 25, 90, 30, 0, 100, 100. There's, you know what I mean? Mill is that's it. That's Mill.
I also wonder a little bit if having these really large sample sizes for these popular decks, everything just like steadily gets closer to 50%.
Well, it gets more accurate. It doesn't get close. I mean, which probably also means it gets closer to 50%, more or less. You know what I mean? Like, it's more like if a deck is a 53% deck, just like Dave was mentioning, like, what, 4 or 5 weeks ago, is like the larger sample size you have, the fewer weirdnesses you're going to have, where it's like, oh, there are 21 matches of Azorius Control at Hunter Burton, and it had like a 68% win rate, right? I mean, that's not the exact numbers, but you know, the more times you have to play some matchups, the more accurate data you're going to have. That error bar gets smaller.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's look at some highlights of, I think, the decks that are among our top 10 sample sizes.
Let's do it.
Most popular deck, 612 matches reporting, Domain Zoo. Overall, 52% win rate. So, not terrible. I mean, I think people were expecting it, and to some extent, they were able to combat it. But it was still, like, a solid choice. It was particularly strong against Tron and Scam and Hammer. And Reanimator, which I think is the other deck to keep an eye on.
Stan, I'm curious which Reanimator cell you're looking at for Domain, because I see 50%.
Did you scroll to the right?
Yeah. I see Esper Reanimator. Is there a different Reanimator? There's four color Reanimator, but that's only four matches.
That's all I need, baby. Small sample size conclusions.
Because I was going to say, when I was facing Reanimator, also the deck I played, again, spoilers for later in the episode, had no graveyard hate in the sideboard. So, which seemed questionable. After I played it, I was like, I think I want some graveyard hate.
Probably a good idea.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, if we're going to combine Four Color Reanimator and Esper Reanimator, since I think it seems like they're more similar than they're different.
Sure.
Like, it's still above a 50% win rate there. Okay. And I actually think, just from playing the deck, that it has pretty good tools against the reanimator plan.
Yeah, like if you can hinder them at all and apply some pressure, I think it really, it's like, it feels very much like a sideboard. Like, you have to draw your sideboard cards, like, to stop them, but that's kind of like modern, right?
But also, like, we have Kavu to punish, like, the slow graveyard setups. We have Leyline Binding to instant speed answer any of their threats. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think having, like, early fast threats, especially Scions, just kind of, like, puts them on the back foot in general. And then whether you're playing the Counterspell version or the more aggressive version with Stubborn Denial, like, you have, like, some kind of counter magic interaction to their combo play.
Here's how my games felt. Turn one, grief you. You know, take the most essential piece you have to try to stop them at all or apply pressure at all. They cast a bunch of spells. They fill their graveyard. They reanimate something. You're not very happy. That's how it felt for me. But again, I think, you know, we see it as like around 50%. So I think that it seems like a toss up right now. So that sounds good.
Skill issue, Shane. Where Domain Zoo seemed to be weakest was against Coffers.
Yes.
19% to win against Coffers. Like, that's brutal.
It felt helpless.
Makes sense.
It felt completely and utterly helpless when I played against it. It was a nightmare.
Coffers is one of the few decks that gets to play Edicts and Wraths, and those are both pretty good against the Domain Zoo decks.
And life gain removal spells.
Yep.
Love that. Love that for the Coffers players.
March of Wretched Sorrow.
Zoo is also pretty weak against Titan, Omnath, and then among the Fringier decks, Merfolk, Izzet Breach, and Prowess. Next up, by sample size, Yawgmoth, 50% with 342 matches.
Anything not interesting the powerhouse here?
Well, I just want to point out, like, 50%, that's that with, like, the second biggest sample size, not the powerhouse that I think a lot of people were worried about after the BNR. Like, a lot of people were saying Amulet and Yawgmoth were just going to, like, take over the format, and I'm not sure that that's bearing out yet.
Yeah, and there's enough bad matchups, and, you know, Murktide is its strongest in, like, the popular deck area, I would say. But largely, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a safe deck right now, right? Like, where it doesn't seem like it's blowing the doors off.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing that it's pretty weak against Titan and Creativity and Reanimator, and, like, obviously Rhinos, but Coffers as well, and Scales too. So, like, some of the more popular decks have fairly reasonable win rates against Yawgmoth.
I want to shout out to the Yawgmoth versus Domain Cascade win rate of 23%. Rhino boys, stay Rhino in.
Yeah.
Stan, let me please talk about Tron up next.
Yes.
329 matches, 42% win rate. It didn't have a lot of strengths. Basically, like, you know, it's pretty good against Murktide, and then some, you know, slightly more obscure decks. Like, we're going down to, like, Domain Cascade at this point, which is not super popular, and Hardened Scales did pretty well. You know, Karn the Great Creator certainly does help there. But yeah, it's overall, I would not want to play this deck, especially into if Domain Aggro and Titan maintain their popularity. You know, you're not going to have a good time, especially if Mill sticks around in any way, shape, or form, because that's never good. I'm just going to keep rolling. Murktide. Very Murktide, 47%.
Yeah.
Look, I have nothing against Murktide, right?
It writes itself.
I have nothing against Murktide. If you like playing Izzet Spells decks, be my guest. But it's just, like, literally every time, it's like 47, 48, 49%. It's kind of like Jund when Jund was not that great. But, you know, it has strengths, it has weaknesses. Like, I think if you know what you're doing, you're going to feel like you're happy. You're going to feel like, if I had just had one more Preordain, I would have got there. But you don't have one more Preordain, you can only play four.
Yeah, I wish that this matrix was able to distinguish between the ones splashing for poison and the ones that aren't. Because even though the top line, that 47%, does not look promising, it was still strong against Titan, which generally to be expected. Creativity, I think that checks out. Reanimator, too. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think those are three really important decks that are in Murktide's crosshairs. Being weak, though, to Zoo, Yawg, Tron, rhinos still somehow and scales and coffers. Like there's this whole other angle of the metagame that Murktide just like can't keep up with.
Yeah.
I just wonder, like, does green make a substantive difference against the zoo decks, for instance, where it seems to be struggling in particular?
Yeah, I'm curious if, like, that, you know, that green creature that grows, you know, might be an interesting thing to also
be druid.
Yeah, because then, like, you know, that provides some blocking or, you know, potentially even overpowering things that are on the other side of the battlefield. Maybe not against zoo with, like, its 5/5s and whatnot, but it certainly can do something. So, all right. Let's keep rolling. We've got Scam up next, or Rakdos Evoke, 51%, slightly above average. And it kind of had, you know, what's interesting, I think, in this matrix, which again is not, you know, encyclopedic, right? We've got like 25 matches, 30 matches, 26, things like that, is like, you know, Scam no longer is kind of like, hey, I'm pretty good against everything. It has, you know, I mean, it's not terrible. Like its worst matchups are like 43, 47, 45. And then it has plenty in the green of like 60% against Tron or 67% against Titan, 62 against Esper Reanimator. And like you were saying, Stan, those are perfectly good decks to have strong win rates against in this day and age. The domain aggro is a concern, right? Like if Domain Aggro is still going to be our number one deck for a little while and you're like a, you know, 43% underdog to it, you're not going to be super happy. There might be ways that you can, you know, hedge your deck against such a strategy without perhaps overwhelmingly dropping your win rate against Titan. Like, you know, if you're 67%, you might not need that last bit of hate that you have in your sideboard and maybe think about ways that you can, you know, shore up that aggressive creature deck mashup or something like that. We've got Titan up next. Titan, 53%, 290 matches. Titan looks pretty good, right? Like, it's 53%. It's one of the stronger popular decks. Like, the only other deck, spoilers, also is right below it, is Five Color Creativity at 53%. So it's only like really weak matchup in the popular deck area is Evoke, as we were just talking about. Creativity, it's slightly worse against. Reanimator, it's slightly worse against, but, you know, we don't have a huge sample size there. And those are slightly less popular decks. I mean, we'll see if, I mean, Reanimator was more popular at Hunter Burton than it was over here in Prague, I believe, right? So, yeah, you know, it really probably depends on where you're playing, how aggressive people are pivoting in your LGS meta or something like that. So Titan gonna Titan. Okay, Creativity, like I said, also 53%. This has a wider win rate spread, right? Like, I'm surprised at the fact that Creativity can shore up at 46% against Domain Aggro, right? I mean, that seems like a challenging matchup. Perhaps just there's enough removal in Creativity. I have not played with or against, you know, this particular deck, so I don't know if either of you have any experience with Creativity and how you felt playing against it with like a Domain Zoo deck.
No,
I see head shaking.
Yeah,
I mean, it's worse stuff. However, are two decks you're going to see, which are Is It Murktide, Esper Reanimator, according to this matrix. So, but besides that, I mean, it does look like a world in which you're going to be pretty happy playing Creativity. Lots of, you know, 50% slightly above, and then a lot of green boxes in this win rate matrix.
Yeah, interesting, worth noting real quickly here. So we talked about how Creativity was maybe not as great against the ring decks. It looks like it's slightly over 50 against Tron and then 60 against Coffers. So if those are maybe the two most popular ring decks, and I guess 55 against Amulet Titan. So, I mean, maybe the ring's not as big of a deal for Creativity as we said.
Ooh, perhaps not. But I'm going to believe what our nice writer sent in to me anyway, because I don't have any experience. So Esper Reanimator, 227 matches, 51%, slightly less than I might have expected for this deck. But, you know, some when people are prepared for a strategy like this, I think that's when you start seeing win rates for, you know, graveyard-focused decks. Anyone who played Dredge back in the day is going to tell you something similar, where it's like, hey, when people start preparing for you, you're a lot less happy. But it does perfectly well against, like, Domain Zoo, Golgari Yawgmoth, and Mono Green Tron, but then it starts to fall off against two other popular decks of Is It Murktide and Rakdos Evoke. But then, you know, makes up for it later, slightly less popular decks, you know, down the line, like against Titan, against Creativity, against, you know, Domain Cascade, against Hardened Scales, Coffers, etc., etc. You're doing fine for yourself. Finally, our 10th place deck, Actually, this might be ninth. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. This is ninth. Domain Cascade. Rhinos. 52%. Perfect. That's all I need to see. Mm-hmm. I'm back on the train.
That's exactly how I left. Felt. I'll
been
take
here
it.
The whole time.
I don't like that Reanimator matchup, however. We're just not fast enough, perhaps.
Well, I also think, like, I mentioned this maybe last week when I was playing Reanimator, I felt like I was tuned to beat Cascade decks, period. And that, I think Rhinos is just gonna struggle against a deck that was designed to beat it.
It's just when Rhinos is better. Already.
Yeah.
One thing that kind of sticks out to me as far as these go is the win rate versus Murktide, 89% out of 18 matches, which, I mean, you know, we've been playing Rhinos for a while. That was traditionally one of the, I would say, maybe closer matchups, or maybe slightly, probably closer to 50%. And I'm assuming that, I guess, Leyline Scion really does make that matchup that much better.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I'll take 89% win rates. And even with the error bar, it says 65 to 99. I'm just going to hedge on the right side of that error bar. It's a 99% matchup, y'all. Don't worry.
Obviously.
10th place deck, Hardened Scales. We got to go to 11, though, because the next one is, I think, perhaps more interesting. So Scales. Scales pretty strong against a number of decks, 54% overall. Like I said, it's not great against Tron, but Tron will hopefully not stick around in popularity that much, as people are kind of like, I don't really want to play a 42% deck, y'all. And, you know, you're good through a lot of the top, like, Scam, Murktide, Yawgmoth, Domain Zoo. Like I said, like, it had a 59% matchup against Domain Aggro. That's what it felt like when I was playing against it. Like, maybe I had a chance, but didn't feel like it. It starts falling off as we get to, like, sort of the middle of the metagame. But then, you know, you have a lot of strengths against kind of the chaff of the field. I mean, these are one matchup, three matchup, you know, match sample sizes. So I'm not going to put a lot of faith in the 100%s down here, but, you know, Scales has a powerful game plan that's consistent as well. So, you know, you're going to be happy playing it, I imagine. I guarantee it. Devin, I'm looking at you here. I feel like you're the Coffersman in the room.
It's been a minute.
And this is a 58% win rate.
That's high.
With 143 matches. The error bar is all on the positive side of 50. It's that, you know, it's potentially a 50 to 66% deck with the sample size we have here. But, you know, it did quite well against, you know, Domain Aggro, like we said, against Yawgmoth, against Tron, against Murktide. It did really darn well. Slightly less good against sort of the next tier of, like, Reanimator, Creativity, Titan, and Evoke. But, you know, overall, having such a strong win rate against four of the more popular decks in the room seems pretty good to me.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, that kind of tracks. Like we talked about, the Coffers deck featuring copies of Damnation, sometimes the Deadly Cover-Ups, as well as, you know, they can just keep loading up on Shieldred's Edicts. It makes the Domain Zoo matchup pretty good. Yawgmoth, always been, I think, a slightly favorable matchup for Coffers. Tron and Murktide both are basically buys. So, yeah, I mean, if the metagame looks like this, it does make sense that Coffers did this well.
Yeah, we're in that world again where I'm like, I wish I hadn't sold my Shieldreds, but I know that it's better off. I'm happier with, like, the $280 than I am with the opportunity to possibly play Coffers in the future. I think I made the right choice. Okay, there is some win rate information. Thank you, mtgdecks.net, for always putting these together so quickly. I love the fact that we had, like, 4,307 matches to work with, because it makes it feel like this is, you know, this is a good idea of what's going on in the paper metagame, in the modern metagame. And I feel like, you know, like I said my piece earlier, which is, like, this feels like the people's meta of modern again, where things are going to be pretty dynamic. You can pretty much play what you want as long as you're not playing Burn or Tron. And, you know, you probably have a pretty good shot at having a good weekend or having some fun. That's all that matters. What do you guys think when you look at kind of what's going on at tournaments like this and the win rates we're looking at, things like that?
I mean, I hope that this is something that people can get behind without too much fuss. We were getting very fussy in the modern community last few months. And I, honestly, I'm not sure what more you could ask for. I think if I'm WotC, I probably want to get those Murktide numbers up. So maybe we're unbanning some new blue cantrips. But
yeah,
other
Bonder,
than that,
screw it. Let's go.
You got to have your Izzet spell players happy.
Right, but other than that, like, the fact that even Cascade had above 50%, and there are, like, some Living End players here, and even though the sample size is, like, quite small, only 31 matches, it had, and among those 31 matches, it was a 42% win rate. It, like, It still had some good win rates, including against Yawgmoth. It brought a 60% win rate home. So, like, I don't know. I think there's a lot of opportunity right now to actually not only play what you like, but maybe experiment too. And maybe there's some brewing that can be done, especially with new sets on the horizon.
I mean, we'll talk about the deck you played, I feel like, is some interesting aggressive experimentation that people are latching onto quickly, right? So it's like, I think this is the era of Modern that I think, like you said, Stan, if you're not happy right now in Modern, then I don't think you're going to be happy, my friend. And, you know, if you don't want to be, that's fine.
Devin, are you happy?
Define happy. I guess
Cowboys won, but only by a field goal happy.
I don't necessarily know if I'm happy, but I will say that my experimentation over the next few months is going to involve adding Leyland Scion to as many decks as possible, and maybe we'll get to talk about that.
Perfect.
Stan, that's what makes me happy.
Stan's definitely going to back you. He's going to be all about this.
I'm going to look at your decks and I'm going to say, can we get a few more Leyland Scions in there?
You know what's funny, though, is like, you know, speaking of aggressive experimentation, as I think that we're seeing, like, we are seeing the ability of decks and people to respond to metagame forces very quickly. Like, you know, I definitely felt, again, I keep spoiling talking about the deck I played this week later. It's like, I definitely felt like people were like prepared for me and had game plans and like main deck, pick your poisons, things like that. I just feel like people playing more edicts, people playing tools to fight against the forces of the, you know, fairly fast modern metagame. And I like that. I like the ability of people to pivot decks if they have the capacity to do so, especially on Magic Online, you know, pivot their main deck and sideboard cards to sort of respond to metagame forces. And that happens a lot more often than when we have a Rakdos Scam, than when we have, you know, Rhinos, like sort of ruling the roost and sort of setting the tone. Both of my co-hosts gave me such an angry look when I said something disparaging about Rhinos being at the top of the metagame. But, you know, I think that's the type of thing when you don't have a clear best deck, then you get these kind of, you know, fun things happening where people are like, oh, Domain Zoo is the best deck now. I can beat that. And then, you know, then the cycle continues. And I think that's what WotC wants. And honestly, I think that's what probably many players, you know, actually want.
One funny final tidbit here, but before we maybe move on to other stuff besides the event, did you happen to see what the most played card in the event was?
Ooh, I did not.
Any guesses?
Pick your poison.
Stan?
Oh, probably a Leyline, right? Leyline of the Guild Pact?
God, is
it? He's got his thinking cap on.
Yeah, I bet it's like
Lightning Bolt.
I bet it's a green card. Pick your poison would be in that. Yeah, no, I don't know.
The answer is pick your poison.
Okay, yes. There we go.
It's just too good, too free for the bean. All right, we keep hinting about what we did this week. So let's get the heck out of this hour-long intro we have done for ourselves, and and then let's talk about some decks. Other decks that we played, not just other people. Stay with us.
Somebody told me it's all happening at the zoo.
Mm-hmm.
And after playing the deck, I do believe it's true.
Stan brought a zoo. Bought a zoo.
I did not buy a zoo. I'm still not buying modern cards. I'm committed to not buying modern cards until MH3 or the season, the next RCQ season. But I did fire up a zoo league. To be honest, I don't remember the last time I've done that. If I've ever played a zoo league in modern. But I was curious to do so because A, it's the most popular deck in the format. B, playing this rainbow package is fun as heck, and I love turn two Scions. And C, I was really interested in the fact that the deck has been evolving. And the version of the deck that I played is, I think, one of the newer evolutions of the deck. And more specifically, I kind of felt like it's just the best version of Murktide I ever played. Because the type of zoo deck I pulled up, it came in second in the March 23rd Modern Challenge by player _BOI_. Boy. And like the build is, you got your 12 domain cards, you have your territorial Kavus.
Mm-hmm.
And then beyond that, it kind of feels like a Murktide deck. 4 Ragavans, we have 1 Murktide, 4 Lightning Bolt, 4 Counterspell, 4 Expressive Iterations. It's throwing in 4 Force Negations too, which I found a little debatable, but you know, we did well in the tournament, so I fired it up. 1 Preordain, 1 Fable, and that's the deck.
Where did this deck come from? Like this wasn't here a week or two ago, was it?
I believe it God.
I mean, I don't expect you to know. It's like, you know, it's full history, but you know, when did we start seeing people mess with this?
The first time that I saw it was from there. I don't know if you guys know this, but there was actually a Modern Showcase challenge that happened this past weekend, and it was Terabed, aka Carl Serap, who I believe him and Mental Misstep, aka Stefan Schutz, worked on the deck together. I believe they're both part of Team Handshake, and they kind of came up with this and they worked together. And I believe Carl made top 4. I want to say either top 8 or top 4. And he did very well in that showcase challenge. I think that's the first time that I saw
it. Yeah. And then I think that's when I was looking at Goldfish, I saw it do well in a showcase. And then like the MTGO meta can be, it's, you know, very reactive. And people are like, oh, dang, this looks interesting. It did well. I'm going to play it.
Yeah. And likewise, like I saw Dak Faden, a Twitter magic person who I follow and like to see what they do at decks, has been tweaking it. So like, I feel like a lot of thoughtful players and notable tweakers have been looking at what they can do with like the Zoo shell to make it stay competitive as it gets a better bigger target on its back. But in play, like, because this felt like more of a Murktide deck than anything else, like I just felt like I was playing tempo, but instead of Murktide, where 8 of my cards are Delver of Secrets, I'm playing a tempo version where like 12 of my cards are Tarmogoyf. And these Tarmogoyfs are nice.
They got a lot of abilities.
Yeah. The problem with Tarmogoyf was that it had no keywords. We should just give it more keywords.
Got to
2 mana 6/7, not good enough. We need keywords.
Yeah. That said, I sort of felt while playing it that everything is worse if you don't have the Splinter Twin on turn 2 in particular. Like, pregame Leyline, turn 2 Scion of Draco. Like, obviously that in and of itself is good, but having Draco along with any other creature makes all of your other creatures so much better that I kind of feel like moving along this Murktide paradigm, you kind of need that extra juice to make a Murktide deck do better than the 42% win rate it had in Prague.
I was thinking it was 47, I think.
Oh, okay. But,
I mean, I'm just going to interject. Like I played old school Domain Zoo, which is funny to call it like old school. It is like, you know, the creatures, the thing where you have, you know, creatures and you turn them sideways and things happen. So I feel like I agree, or if what I hear you saying is perhaps it relies too heavily on Leyline to have its highest highs. And I definitely felt like the deck overall, the 5-color deck, is much worse without Leyline of the Guild Pact, where it's just like everything feels worse, from fetching to play a turn 1 creature to trying to have like all of your colors online as fast as possible for your ley lines, or for powering up your Kavu, or powering up your Nishoba Brawler or whatever. Like, there's just a lot of like considerations that you don't have to worry about when you have the Guild Pact out, and especially like powering up, you know, your Scions, or just allowing you to you have a fully powered up whatever that wild and cattle, that formerly banned cat, mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, it's, and then without it, it's like, crap, I have to make so many annoying hedges where it's just like, oh, well, I guess I fetch like this, and if I go get my Savai Triome, I then can't cast anything on turn one. But if I get the Savai Triome turn two, I also can't cast my two drop. Or if I do this, then I'm only going to have like a 3/3. And it's just like all of these things like feel so much worse when you don't have it. I have a question for you, Stan. Like, I know that the power of the ley line is really good, right? But then, like, but even when you have it, you still are sort of down a card. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're down a card that has action. You're sort of like, you know, it feels like the most enchantment of the enchantments, where it's just like, now my deck does the thing. Mm-hmm. And you start with six cards if you're lucky. You know what I mean? And that still is an issue when people are, you know, playing removal against you, or you want to have one more piece of interaction or something like that. And it's like an interesting, you know, consolation to be like, okay, my deck is really good, but I always start with six cards. Mm. You know, if you're lucky.
Yeah. I'll be curious to hear Devin's thoughts, but like, to me, what you're describing is tempo problems of you're sacrificing cards for power, and you're like basically making the trade of a short-term benefit potentially for like a really explosive ceiling if you're lucky.
Yeah, I was going to argue with you about the use of tempo, but then when you talked about, yeah, like you're buying yourself speed, you're buying yourself explosiveness, you're buying yourself, you know, the mana advantage for like ley line binding or something like that. So yeah, I hear you.
So there's two ways to approach this. The first one is which, you know, the deck that we're looking at with Stan played, where when you're down a card, you utilize card advantage engines to get that back, like Expressive Iteration and, you know, things like that, Fable the Mirror Breaker, cards like that. And then you have the other approach, which is Zoo, which is the deck that Shane played, which is instead of replacing that with an extra card in my hand, I'm going to replace that with taking one additional turn off of your clock. And there's two, kind of the two approaches to that.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, when we talked about Rhinos the other week, where it's like, you know, this is not a novel idea, but the fact that you would go down so many cards with Rhinos frequently is like you just made up for it by one spell becoming two, four Rhinos. And so, you know, these are the kind of, you know, considerations we have with decks like this, I suppose.
The interesting thing that I thought of when you asked your question is that I would almost rather have the turn zero ley line with no Scion than vice versa. Correct. Of a Scion with no ley line.
I would too.
Because...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because ley line gives you a bigger ceiling. It's harder to cast. It's castable, but much harder to cast, obviously. But also, like, part of the my experience with this league in particular, and why I kind of started this point, is that everything is worse when you don't have Splinter Twin, is that we used to experiment with Scion and other domain decks because Leyline Binding is so good. Mm-hmm. And prior to Guild Pack being printed, it just never felt quite enough. Sure, your mana is a little dirtier, and like, sure, you may have a turn two 4/4 flyer, but on rate, like, that's just Tarmogoyf. Like, that's not really good enough, a 4/4 flyer on two. You need all those extra keywords, and especially if you can add all those extra keywords to other creatures too, like, you get a lot more benefit from it. So the turn zero Guild Pack, even with no payoff in hand, like, it's worth going down that one card because all of your top decks can actually be like so much more impressive than when you don't have the Guild Pack. Even if you have a Scion, like, you're not playing bigger top decks than otherwise.
And the tempo issues, like, that I was getting at was sort of like the mana stuff, where it's like, okay, if I fetch in a way that lets me cast my creatures, they're not as good as they could be if I have the ley line out. Like, I'm curious how correct it is to like almost do a, you know, not exactly a Tron type thing, but just like, how much are you, mulliganing for a ley line in a deck like this? Because it just like, it feels so much worse without it. And I'm, you know, of course that's very matchup dependent, where it's like, how big do my creatures need to be? How fast do I need to be on the board? How much pressure do I need to be applying? How much do I worry about blocking what they're throwing at me? All that kind of stuff. But, you know, I can't stress how much it felt, you know, mopey without it.
And I think that's probably one of the most underrated things about Leyline is the fact that it just, not only does it, you know, fix your mana and, you know, you have perfect mana the whole game, you don't have to fetch either. And there's a lot of matchups where that matters, right? You know, just playing against any other aggressive deck, could be a Murktide Mirror, could be playing against Burn, anything like that. Just being able to never have to take a single point of damage from any of your lands is one of the most important parts of this. And I think that's, you know, going, just echoing what Stan is saying about Leyline is a more important card in your opener than like having Leyline plus Scion.
Two things there. One is fetching for Leylines. The only time I did that was in a match I had against Burn, where I just knew like they can't beat Leyline Scion. So I think there were a couple times where I had to go to like 6 or 5, and that was it. Like you just sort of went on the spot. It really felt like Splinter Twin there. The second thing, Devin, your point about like Leyline means you don't have to fetch. You know what else is nice about not having to fetch in this deck? The lands are bad. And the reason are bad is because none of them surveil. and so last week I'm playing Rhinos and I have like 3 surveil lands, I think, two or three. The week before I played Gorios, where you're playing like 4 or 5 surveil lands. Coming back to like not playing surveil lands in this deck, I was like, am I playing Pioneer or something? Why does my mana suck? And it's just, there's all these turns where it's like, I wish I could fetch for action in a way that surveil lands feel like you're fetching for action in addition to lands, and not having that access. Like, obviously playing a tap shockland or a tap dual land is probably objectively wrong in a zoo strategy, because you need to be able to like sometimes curve out with Ragavans and whatnot. But even though that's wrong, like, I don't want to be right. Sure. Like, I just want to be able to have, like, at least one surveil land.
You've become surveil-pilled.
I'm surveil-pilled.
Well, I mean, we didn't write it into this episode because it might maybe for another week, but Frank Carson had an article on Channel Fireball, classic Frank numbers thing, where he just did a bunch of deck analysis and, you know, he came to the conclusion based on data that basically, the more surveil lands people are running, the higher their win rates are in many decks. And I felt the same thing, Stan, where it's like, you know, especially a deck that relies so much. I mean, so many decks do, but a deck like this, where it's just like, I really want to draw a creature or a burn spell. I need that reach. I need that interaction. I need another creature to the board. And having to draw blindly at all times really did feel like a setback.
Yeah. So I'm glad we're all on the same page. You know, one of the things that we're also talking about is like this deck has been evolving very rapidly. And I felt that it was forcing the metagame to evolve rapidly too. And maybe part of that is like data from Prague coming in over the course of the weekend and impacting Magic Online play while I was testing this out. And, you know, I finished a couple of my matches this morning, so like we've had all of the winners and losers as well from LMS. But I just dealt with like so many pick your poisons.
Yeah.
Saw like random Haywire Mites out of decks that I never thought would have Haywire Mites. And it just made me realize that there's a lot of ways to fight against the good cards, and having a 4/4 flyer with all the keywords on 2, yes, it's good, but it's not as game defining as I think it was maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago.
I'd agree.
As we talked about, Pick Your Poison was the most played card in Prague, and there's a reason for that. Everybody who showed up to that tournament was prepared for the Leyline Scion stuff, because it just was the most dominant deck in online and all that stuff. So, yeah, it makes sense. Everybody is adapting to it, and would not be surprised if you even, like Shane was saying, main deck Pick Your Poison. That's a thing that people are doing now.
Yeah, and look, if you're not playing green, or maybe you're locked into only playing 3 mana spells and up, like, there's other random disenchants and edicts to explore, or like boils and other bounce effects.
Hibernation.
Like, hibernation, that's the one. Yeah, like there's ways to deal with Hexproof Scion. And yeah, I think people are just like finding more and more of those, enough to help keep a deck like this in check, which is probably for the best.
We're going to start playing Vraska's Fall and Rhinos now.
Ooh, what does that do?
It's just a 3-mana edict. You could also play Far Away, but
Vraska's Salt, is that the one that also gives your opponent a poison counter?
Sure does.
Heck yeah.
Heck yeah.
Sign me up. All right. My last takeaway with this version of the deck, I wish I had Tribal Flames. Really missed it. And if I'm going to fire this deck back up, I think I would just swap the Force of Negations for the Tribal Flames. On the one hand, I think Force of Negation makes top deck guild packs a little bit more useful. And like having Force back up is flexible enough that even in a tempo-ish deck like Murktide, like you'll find targets for it. But Tribal Flames, like having that extra bit of reach and being able to make it a lava axe like so consistently, I think that's probably worth it more than, you know, two for one-ing yourself and like hopefully having something to pitch with Force and hopefully finding a target for Force. Like I guess I wanted more burn, and all I had was the bolts, and like bolts were okay. Leyline Binding obviously much better than bolt, and like I think in a deck like this, Tribal Flames is maybe as good as bolt, even though it costs more mana, it's doing enough more damage that I think going to five might be worth it.
Yeah, Tribal Flames is a good card. I mean, in the strategy, at least, I mean, in the deck, how much do you feel like this deck is this a secret five color deck, or is it, you know, are you not trying to get five colors as fast as perhaps Domain Zoo proper is?
The Murktide version?
Yeah, your Murktide version. Do you think like are you still like aggressively going like, you know, Triome into Shockland type stuff?
Yeah, unless you just like happen to have an opener that's like Murktide Counterspell Expressive Iteration and it looks more of like an is it hand than a five color hand. Absence of that, I'm still going for the five color mana because like you can always top deck a Leyline, which is going to be really important, and you have the four Kavus, and the Kavu, like you really want it to be a 5/5. It dodges so much and so much removal. It
doesn't dodge Tribal Flames.
Does not dodge Tribal Flames, but it like it's bigger than most other things out there, and I think that's really almost like the most important removal to dodge. It's just like outclassing other creatures.
I'd agree.
Shane, any other notable experiences you want to mention from your league?
Okay. I'm gonna. So you've played the, you know, Zoo version, correct? Like with, you know, Wild Nakatl and Nashoba Brawler and whatnot.
I know that I've cast Nashoba Brawlers and Wild Nakatls. I just don't remember when.
Okay.
Like it was a while ago. It was not this rainbow deck.
Got it. But I believe you could imagine perhaps the specific pressures that having a green one drop that wants you to have red and white colored mana, having a red one drop that you want to play on turn one in Ragavan, having, you know, a bunch of high quality two drops that you want to be able to cast on curve, you know, having interaction that relies on having, you know, four to five colors to be cast efficiently, having a 4/4 flyer that really wants you to have five colors of mana to cast on, you know, quote unquote curve. All of these pressures, and I mentioned this earlier when we were talking about the Leyline of the Guild Pact, is just like how bad it feels to have to work around these considerations when you're playing this deck. And honestly, it's like, I don't know how this deck worked before it had Leyline of the Guild Pact. Because it feels so bad to have to think about this, to have to sacrifice the pressure of Wild Nakatl's, you know, fairly mopey power and toughness as it is right now, let alone having to like fetch to make it work.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point you bring up, because there was, you know, ever since MH2 came out and they, you know, spoiled Scion and Territorial Kavu, there have been so many iterations and different styles of these Zoo decks, and I spent a lot of time at it myself very early on in MH2's cycle, and I think one thing that I quickly realized, like Shane's saying, is that, you know, this is obviously prior to Leyline, honestly, the deck felt better without the one drops, because you always felt pressured into fetching a Triumph into a Shockland to have your Scion or Kavu paired up. And if you're always fetching a Triumph, then you're just skipping your one drops anyways. Why even play them?
Yeah. Yeah, it I honestly was like, I know I kind of have to play these things, but it never feels like it's making my deck work like it needs to unless I have Leyline out and then everything's great. So yeah, that was kind of like a big takeaway for me, is like, more, even perhaps more than your deck, Stan, it's just like, this is a Leyline of the Guild Pack deck with like creatures that all take advantage of it. Or it's like, this is the foundation of this entire thing now. And what, you're like 42% to have it in your opener, I believe, with set, like with a full seven. And that's not amazing. And then if you're mulliganing, you're, you know, going down multiple cards just to have your deck be pretty functional. And like you, then, like you said, is I agree, where the forces of the metagame feel like they are quickly aligning against a strategy like this. And this, that might be the type of thing that keeps us from having like your waged upon top eight of, you know, a full 32 Leyline of the Guild Packs and Leyline Bindings and Scion of Dracos, because like people are very quickly just being like, look, they gave us Leyline of the Guild Pack. They also gave us a one mana flexible card that directly answers it, and pick your poison.
It's sorcery speed.
Yes, that's sorcery speed. Yes. And I think, you know, there's high highs and low lows. And I feel like perhaps more than a deck like the Murktide Evolution, I feel like this is less geared towards like giving you like legitimate alleviation of those low lows, where it's just like when you're not functioning, when you're facing down like coffers or scales or things like that, like you have a sad face on and you're waiting for the match to end without, you know, just clicking the concede button. Or you can do that too. It's your time. No, you're not obligated to finish the match. That's what rule is that in the
104.3A.
Thank you. I knew you were going to know that.
Oh, I know.
Man, you just whipped that out of your dome. I want to add one last point to my recap of this deck. I loved playing this deck. I had a lot of fun with it. I had a lot more fun with this than I did playing Goryeo's last week. And if it weren't for Pioneer Season coming up in the next RCQ cycle, like Stanislav would be looking at some of these cards. Now, I know that I sometimes trick myself into playing a Murktide strategy instead of cascading, which is never the right decision for me, but it was just a blast. It was a blast kind of like splitting that hair and getting a little bit best of both worlds, and, you know, Leyline into Scion is a hell of a drug, and being able to like back it up with Ragavans and Expressive Iteration and Counterspells, like that also scratched a really unique itch that I had a lot of fun with.
Speaking of Leylines, Doom. What nonsense did you cook up this weekend?
All right. Well, so here's the thing. So I listened to, you guys didn't have me on the pod last week, so I listened to the episode on the drive to one of my RCQs.
Hey, you were invited.
Okay. Well, in any case, I listened to the episode, and part of I heard the bit where you guys had had a bet, a wager of sorts, where, you know, where they're going to be four copies of Leyline and Scion in the entire top eight. And I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to try and make that happen. So I decided to take Leyline and Scion and put it into Tron.
This is true Dive Down host allegiance here.
You have heard that. See, I gotta get somebody paid out. So now obviously it kind of started as a meme where we were just, you know, thinking about what kind of decks can we put Leyline Scion into and all this stuff. And, I wasn't even planning on playing the challenge on Saturday, cause I got home super late in the, from the RSQ the night before, but I was like, you know what, let's have some fun. Let's try it. And, I lost playing for top eight. I actually almost got there, almost got all the way to the very end. Wow. The two matches I lost were to Goryeo's and Murktide. That was my winner name was Murktide. And then I beat Domain Zoo, Scales, Murktide, Rhinos for my five wins.
Did you even tell us what this deck is yet?
What do you mean? I said Leyline Tron.
Okay, so Leyline Tron. Okay, so it's just Tron. It's Tron, but you took some Chromatic Spheres and what else out of here?
Yeah, I'll read the deck list for the listeners at home. So we got one Wyrmcoil Engine, a Cityscape Leveler, two Ulamog, the Ceaseless Hunger, four Cyanide Draco for creatures, and then four Karn the Great Creator, four Ancient Stirrings, four Sylvan Scrying, four Chromatic Star, four Expedition Map, two Chromatic Sphere, three Oblivion Stone, three of the One Ring, four Landland of the Guild Pact, and 20 lands.
Still finds space for 20. A true gamer. Shaving to like 17.
Here's the thing. I actually started with 18. And one thing that I quickly realized, the initial list that I had only had two copies of Sanctum of Ugin. Now, for those of you who don't remember Sanctum of Ugin, it's land that taps for colorless. And whenever you cast a colorless spell with converted mana cost 7 or greater, you can sack the Sanctum and search for a colorless creature, reveal it, and put it into your hand. So hear me out for a second. And this happened multiple times during the challenge. So I can confirm it does come up. You have Leyline on turn 0. You play a Sanctum of Ugin you play a Tronlane on turn 1. And then turn 2, you play a Sanctum of Ugin and you cast Scion. The Scion triggers the Sanctum to go find another Scion. And then you basically just chain them starting on turn 2. Stan cannot believe what he has just heard.
Wow. Sanctum of Ugin's a sweet card.
There you go. You did it.
Another cool thing about, so that's why there's four Sanctum of Ugins and therefore more than the normal land count. The normal land count's like 17 or 18, but because I figured I was going to be sacrificing Sanctum and I wanted it in every opening hand, I wanted to play four copies. Because that's basically your Splinter Twin is just have Leyline, Scion, Sanctum. That's if you have two Scions by turn 3, like who's beating that most of the time? And then another really cool thing that's like very subtle but comes up really often is Leyline lets your Tron lands tap for colored mana, which means if you open on Leyline, you can start with Tron land and tap the Tron land to cast Ancient Stirrings, which you would normally need a chromatic effect for. But now that you don't need the chromatic effects, now your Leylines just do that for you.
Yeah, who knew that having your lands tap for every basic land type can be good? It's weird.
Also, yeah. Ancient Stirrings finds Scion of Draco. So you can go like put Leyline into play, Tron land, Ancient Stirrings, find the Scion, cast the Scion on turn 2. It's like, I know it looks like a meme, but I do actually think that like the Leyline Scion stuff does actually make Tron a better deck.
No, I don't disagree. Like, I mean, it seems like this is not quite like Burn with Oko level. Like, this seems like, hey, I'm doing a thing that makes sense with the fundamental tenets of what my deck is setting out to do, right? Which is like, I need to put together the very cool combination of a chromatic effect in the Tron land to be able to then cast my Sylvan Scrying or my Ancient Stirrings. You're like, you know what else does a chromatic effect? Leyline of the Guild Pact. And it also does other stuff.
I don't know. It was a lot. It was wild. I had a great time.
Do you like Tron historically, Devin?
No, I mostly just did this for memes. But
yeah, do you see yourself maybe picking it back up?
This version, the meme is dead.
The memes became dreams.
Yeah.
Well, we get a top 8. That's my goal, is just like every single week until Pioneer season starts, I'm just gonna play Modern challenges with random decks that have Leyline Scion and try to see if I can top 8. That's what I plan on doing for the next couple of weeks. So
I love that for you. I need you to put one copy of Dive Down into your sideboard so people know the truth.
Okay,
it's worth it. I guess, like, maybe one last question on rainbow cards. You referred to our wager last week, and I'm saying, like, I have a feeling we're going to see one top 8 from, like, a challenge or something that's going to just be 8 decks that have the rainbow package within them. Do you think that's likely, or did this last week of kind of evolution and adaptation make that actually less likely? Because I almost see both adaptations happening, whereas like more people adopting it because they realize it can go everywhere, while also people finding more solutions for turn 2 Scions in particular.
I guess the best way for me to put it is I think people are going to just eventually get bored, because there's not really a ton of reason to be necessarily innovating or like trying to be super competitive and modern. I guess that if you want to play the challenge and stuff, but I think a lot of people just like memeing or like trying different things. And I honestly think that I'm not going to say it's likely, but I would not be surprised if it did happen at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Spike played Leyline Scion and Coffers today. Like, what are we doing here?
But you don't think it's too strong?
I mean, it is extremely powerful and it leads to a lot of non-games, but like you said, there are a lot of answers to it. I think the biggest issue for me, I don't necessarily know for a fact if it's too strong yet, but the fact that it leads to a lot of non-games is a little frustrating, and half of it is uncounterable, right? Like, you can't counter the ley line. You can answer it, sure, but you're not going to want to play... You wouldn't ideally want to play main deck sideboard cards, like pick your poison, but that's where we're at right now. And I think the biggest issue for me is it's so inexpensive in terms of on the curve, right? Like, if you're on the play and you have turn 2 ley line scion, there's a few decks, a subset of decks that just cannot defeat that start. So... I don't know. We'll see.
You know, if it's like one of those things that I talk about when we evaluate decks or cards or things like that. It's just like the floor can be low. The ceiling can be extremely high, right? And so like the general variance of strategies, or most strategies like this, I mean, Tron is a perfect, well-oiled machine. So it makes it even more oily. But, you know, a lot of times with stuff like this, it's like, well, when I have it, it's great. When I don't have it, or I draw it later and it's like a dead, you know, dead draw or something like that. And, you know, we can always try to save some hedge where it's like, yeah, I can discard it to something, then sure. But that's not always the case. And so it's self-regulating, right? Where it's like, in most senses, maybe we'll get to the point where it's not quite as self-regulating, and people either can't fight against it, or people figure out the magic deck where it's just like, you know, this stuff always feels pretty darn good, or it's so reliable that it's a 56% win rate deck or something like that. But I don't think we're there.
Yeah, once you start seeing 4 main deck pick your poison, then you know we have a problem.
Well, it's funny. I actually said that in our admin channel this weekend when I was playing my league. Is, you know, I always do a little bit too much of like narration when I'm playing, because I just want to sort of take notes for myself and just spew to you guys. And I was like, you know, when you're seeing main deck pick your poison in a league, you know that something might be a little off, where it's like, you know, the main deck surgical extraction of the old, is it Phoenix days or something like that, where it's like, is this what we're forced to do? Like, you know, it still is a sideboard card. It can be a dead draw. It can be a dead card in your hand if there's nothing to fight with it. So we'll see.
Okay, cool.
We've got more Devin news though, right?
Yeah. So before we wrap this episode, I have to ask Devin, what's the secret? Like, how do I win an RCQ? Like, WTF?
You just got to play the broken deck. That's
okay.
It. That's literally it. That's the secret to my success.
What did you play this time?
So we ended up, I spent a lot of time on this through like Monday and Tuesday of the stream before the RSQ weekend. And it's, you may not know what this card is, but it's called Prof's Eidetic Memory. This was a standard RSQ, by the way. But Prof's Eidetic Memory, it's an enchantment. It's a Builderon card. But basically, it's ETB, draw a card, and then at the beginning of combat, you get to put X counters on a creature you control, where X is the number of cards you've drawn minus one. So basically, ooh, additional cards drawn. And then if you look at the deck list, consider Ledger Shredder, Evangel of Synthesis, which is a 2/3 that ETBs loots, Steam Core Scholar, which is a 2/2 for 3 Flying Vigilance, ETB, draw 2, discard 2, or discard instant sorcerer or flyer, Tainted Indulgence. There's another weird card in here, Ingenious Prodigy. It's basically like, you know, again, it's just the draw engine. So all this deck is just drawing a bunch of extra cards, and you're getting like really, really wide on the battlefield with the enchantment, the Eidetic Memory. The reason I played this deck was because I think Dimir Midrange is probably one of the most popular decks in standard, like traditional Dimir Midrange, which is playing a lot of these cards, but you know, it's not playing a lot of these like draw engines. It's playing more like 2/1 flyers and more Gixes, and just like the creature quality is a little bit lower. And the genesis behind this deck was I wanted to be able to make my creatures better so that I could race the aggressive and combo decks, because there's been a lot more of those popping up. So yeah, that's where the idea came from, and it performed phenomenally. I ended up going 3-0, draw, and then 3 of the Swiss, 3 of the top 8, rather. I only lost one game all tournament. It was the very first game of the RCQ, and then I did not drop another game. So yeah, deck's busted. You know, unfortunately, the standard season is over, because this is where I would recommend listeners to play this deck at their next RCQ so they could very easily win. But yeah, standard season's over. I will say that there was two people in my friend group that ended up going to RCQs on the weekend after I won, and they both played this deck and won. So good track record.
Dang.
Yeah.
Deck's busted.
Yeah, congratulations. How many RCQs in a row is, or rather, like, how many RCs in a row have you qualified for?
Only two.
Okay.
Yeah, I played Atlanta and then this one, but
okay,
it feels like so much more.
It really does.
I did play San Diego last year too, but the one that I skipped was I didn't end up qualifying in Modern. So I played, I won the Pioneer season, didn't win in Modern, and then I won one in this season too. So,
well, you make it look easy. Congrats to you.
Thank you.
And maybe we'll see you at the RC. Dive Down road trip.
You guys going to Dallas?
We've been before.
Ooh, was it at that same one, Dallas Fort Worth? That was a nice, little area. Bailey,
I think
it was by stuff. We could go to that steakhouse again. They had really good seafood.
It's by a Jamba Juice, man. You know how hard it is to find Jamba Juices these days?
Had good wine. That's worth a trip.
Yes. I played Profts Enchantment in a limited deck, and even in limited, it was really good.
Yeah, that card's messed up.
It's dope. The fact that it puts counters on
is so good.
Really impressive. Yeah. All right, well, cool. I believe that wraps up this week's episode. It was a long one, but we got a lot covered, and I'm glad we did. If you haven't yet, make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you get the latest episodes as soon as they come out. And if you use Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please leave us a rating and review. If you'd like to submit a question to the podcast or just reach out in general, you can tweet us at TheDiveDown, all one word, or email thedivedown@gmail.com. If you'd like to support the show, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/divedown. You can also check out our merch store at thedivedown.com/store. You can support Doomwake through his Twitch, twitch.tv/Doomwake. The O's are zeros, people.
They are.
I'm so tired of repeating this, but like, come on. Also, head over to heavyplay.com to get some incredible deck and dice boxes and playmats featuring the Equip Mag system. Use promo code TheDiveDown2024 for 10% off your first order at heavyplay.com. Shout out to Manor Traders for sponsoring The Dive Down. If you use our promo code of TheDiveDown_K4L, that gets you 10% off your first 2 months of renting Magic Online cards. And if you want to double check that promo code, just check the show notes. It's in the show notes. Always and forever. As always, special thanks to the bands Nowhere in Spaceblood for letting us use their music. And until next week, I'm going to try a new one here, guys. Until next week, get out there and have fun playing Magic.